This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement, as the Sky Bet Championship and half of Sky Bet League One reach the final international break of the season. Still plenty for us to talk about and plenty of guests to talk to on this week's episode, when we'll meet the Sky Bet League One manager whose EFL debut season is shaping up to be one of the most famous in his club's short history.
For me, it was a game by game, head down, create a really strong culture, which I feel we've done at the club. You know, we've got a terrific group of players that I can't speak highly enough of.
And either side of him, we're in the company of two well-travelled strikers, one who a year ago won the Sky Bet Championship title and who's back in the division for his second loan move of this campaign.
It's nice to show people that actually, do you know what, yeah, I can do it. I am a good player. You give me the chance and this is what I can do.
And another from Sky Bet League 2 whose team are very much on the up.
No, exactly. We've got 8 games to go and it's all here for us to go and get and perform for.
It's the official EFL podcast. So, in the absence of much domestic league football, it is non-league day this coming weekend, an event in the football calendar that just a few years ago, our first guest would have very much been part of, playing for teams like Seaham Red Star, Concert, Whitby Town, Mask United, and Gateshead. His football journey has also taken him from Glenn Hoddle's Academy in Spain through 22 minutes in the Premier League with West Ham United. Then there's his EFL teams, Port Vale, Preston North End, Tranmere Rovers, Middlesbrough, QPR, Norwich City, and this season, Jordan Hugel has taken his shooting boots on loan spells to West Bromwich Albion and now Cardiff City, where his arrival has coincided with their revival and 7 league wins in his 11 games so far. I get nervous, Jordan, when I do that stuff, that I missed one of your teams out. Was I okay, do you think? Did I nail it? Or was anybody
else? I don't know, mate. I think I miss all my teams out if I'm missing them all.
Yeah, I mean, Listen, I guess you're proof, aren't you, that footballers have to be very resilient, managing their emotions, highs, lows. Is that a fair summary of what your life's been like over the last 12, 13 years?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. It's been, especially from the teams that you've listed off there, it's been a bit of a roller coaster, and one that I've kind of not had time to look back on and to do, because it just keeps going. I'm just going where my career's taken me, and I think I get to a point later on in my career where I look back and I think, do you know what, I've done all right. I've done okay.
You've already done more than okay. Would you describe yourself as a late starter? The fact that you had to go off to Jerez, Glenn Hoddle and all the rest of it and earn your stripes in non-leagues?
Yeah, I started at 21 at Port Vale, professionally at 21 at Port Vale, and it was initially for that. They produced like an under 23s, like development squad type thing. So it was initially for that. So that was at 21. So as you can imagine, from 16 to 21, I was playing non-league with some men who wanted to kick lumps out of me, and I recall being told that someone was going to bite my nose off.
Wow. Wow. I mean, in fairness, mate, just looking at that nose, it would be a good it would be a good meal, wouldn't it? Let's be honest. I can understand their desire to eat your nose.
Do you know what? At 16-year-old, mate, hearing that from a grown 30-odd-year-old man, I was terrified.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but has that added a dimension to your game then, Jordan, that has taken you to the level that you got to, knowing that having that physicality can be intimidating to opposition players?
Yeah, I'd definitely say so. I'd say I've said this to everyone, it's not the traditional route of going through an academy and being, I'd say, technically not amazing, but it's given me a different set of skills which I've had to use and earn my stripe, which, as you said, but I believe has got me to where I've got to.
Yeah, because the other element of this was, obviously, amongst those moves, there was the move to Norwich and being very much part of winning the title last season, but notably Daniel Fart paid tribute to you and said it's not just about the starting 11 on the field, but in Jordan we had a leader in the dressing room. It was one of the main reasons we were promoted. So has that mentality come out of your background as well, Jordan?
Yeah, as you know, I'd like to think that I'm quite a humble guy. As I said, I've never had it easy. I've had to work for everything that I've got. So at the end of at Norwich yesterday, I knew my role. I knew where I was in that team. I knew I belonged there, and I believed in everything that was going on at Norwich. I was sold the club by Stuart Webber, by Daniel Fark, and I believed in everything that was going on. And whenever I got time on the pitch, I knew that I'd give everything. I'd do what I'd usually do. I'd give everything. But as I said, sometimes for me as well, if you want to be successful, you not only you've got to be good on the pitch, you've got to be good off the pitch. And for me, being a good teammate and making sure everyone's standards are high and making sure I'm pushing people and helping improving people is also a big part of the package that comes with me. And I believe that if you went to speak to any of the lads or the staff at Norwich, that not many of them would say any bad things about me, because as I said, I was that person who, not, as I said, not going to give it all, but did the rest of the stuff as well.
So if you can spot a good fit quite easily and quite quickly, can you also instantly spot when you've stepped into something where, oh, not quite how I imagined it, not quite how I was sold it?
I mean, you can always spot the good, and sometimes you don't know the bad until you're in it. But as I said, it's one of those things where you've got to deal with it, and it only adds strings to your bow.
If I made you pick one moment that where you were on top of the world from that great big list of clubs you've played for, what would it be? Now, be very careful, because you're from the Borough. I'm a Middlesbrough fan.
Yeah.
And obviously you had your spell on loan there. But by the same token, you've won the championship title. So this is going to be very interesting. I'm shutting up for a minute here.
Obviously playing for Middlesbrough was, it was always the dream for me. But as you know, at my time at Middlesbrough wasn't, it just didn't go as well as what I thought it was. And I've done countless of interviews and saying that, like, sometimes things don't happen the way you want them to, whether that was down to me just trying too hard because it was my hometown club. But I'll be honest, there's two things that stand out for me. I can't pick one. There's two. One is obviously with the list of teams that you named there, to, I know you said it was only 22 minutes in the Premier League, but to even reach the Premier League for me, if you said that to me when I was 20 year old, I'd laughed at you. I'd have laughed at you. And I never, ever could have imagined making the Championship League One, never mind the Premier League. So to make that Premier League debut was a massive, massive proud moment for me. As I said, I could have never imagined it. And probably the second one would be my year last year with Norwich and winning the Championship, not only winning it, but comfortably winning it as well, winning it in style, in the way that we played. It was, we had one of the best squads in the league. And I think off the pitch as well, we were the best off the pitch. I think there's not one member of staff or player who there who I would have done anything, I'd have done anything for him. And that was the attitude that we had within that squad.
So as you went through the celebrations and, you know, had your pictures taken with your medals and all the rest of it, does it ever come in your head that your face might not fit for the next level up? In other words, one of the things always fascinates me is a load of guys fighting for the prize, which is promotion, but inevitably it leads to obsolescence for some of them.
And not necessarily. I think that I never go anywhere thinking my face doesn't fit, but it's one of them things where people have plans and it is what it is. I came into the game late, so I can't afford to be sat around doing nothing. So that was the kind of me. With Norwich, I got promoted, and my instant thought is, I want to prove myself in the Premier League. That was the whole reason why I went to Norwich. I wanted to get back to the Premier League to show everyone who thought I couldn't do it that I can do it. And nothing's changed regardless of if I'm there or not. Even if, God forbid, they go down this year and then they go back up, my ambition will still be the same, to prove to the people who think I couldn't do it in the Premier League that I can do it in the Premier League. That is my motivation going forward. And I will do anything for, as I said, if I'm back at Norwich next year or wherever, I will do anything for that chance again in the Premier League.
Will you be back at Norwich again next season? Because obviously it feels like quite a nice fit what's been going on under Steve Morrison at Cardiff, doesn't it? I mean, is it your sort of city? Is it your sort of club, Cardiff City?
I'm loving my time at Cardiff. And as I said, I said the other day, I'm really enjoying playing my football there. And it was Steve Morrison. He knows what type of striker I am. As I said, he was very similar to myself as a player as well. I don't know what's going to happen in the future. It's one of them things where, as far as I know at the moment, I'm going back to Norwich in the summer to do getting ready for pre-season. And then from there, we go from there. I've got a year left on my contract, so I'm contracted there still. So ideally, I'd like to get promoted with them again if they come down, or I'd like to prove myself in the Premier League if they stay up. It's one of them things where that's my aim. I want to do well and play in the Premier League again. And as I said, I'm loving my time at Cardiff, and who knows what happens.
Can you as players get almost as much satisfaction out of turning around Cardiff's situation? There's a very healthy gap above the relegation zone now, as you would operate at the top end of the season. Is there a real buzz around the place because of the run you've been on?
Yeah, there's a massive buzz around the place. And you look at the results. I mean, we've had mad games. Like, we've been playing twice a week for the last 7 weeks or whatever. So it's been hectic. But I think it's kind of what we needed, because we hit a bit of form and we've carried it on throughout the full thing. I think since I've been there, I think I signed in January, I've lost one game that I've been involved in. Yeah. And I think we've lost two overall since then. So I get a lot of satisfaction out of that, but ultimately I get a lot of satisfaction out of playing and scoring and having a impact on games and proving people wrong.
Yeah. So ever sweeter, because obviously it didn't quite work out for you at West Brom earlier in the season. Does it make it even sweeter what you're going through now, that you have found the right fit, circumstances are getting in your stride?
Yeah, it does feel a bit sweet. And as I said, you look at where Cardiff were and probably looking at me saying, "Oh, he's going there, they might get relegated." But to go there and do what we've done, and it's nice to show people that actually, do you know what? Yeah, I can do it. I am a good player. You give me the chance and this is what I can do.
Not done badly for a former barman at the Dickens Inn in Middlesbrough, a well-known match day haunt, have you?
not done badly at all. I'd say my career's done all right, from pouring pints and doing some cocktails.
Yeah. Did you ever used to work on Borough Match Day?
I used to work every weekend. I used to work Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and used to go in Sunday to clean. But then I used to play for Mask on a Saturday as well, and then used to go straight from the game to work behind the bar.
Gotcha. That's what I meant. So you were playing Saturday football at the time, yeah. But you'd kind of, as soon as your game was over, you'd dash in and do the sort of evening stretch after.
Then I'd see half the lads out and I'm serving them.
half the Middlesbrough players are we talking about?
No, I'm talking about the Mask lads who I'd be playing
with. Oh, the Mask lads. Sorry, I thought you were about to dupe a load of professional footballers in it with the manager a few years ago. Or people would be going, is he talking about the Borough players? Well, they had a terrible season that season. And that's obviously why. I've got you. I love stories like yours, Jordan. I just love the sort of trajectory of it. But I'm not sure you answered finally the resilience question. When you are having a challenging time, and maybe this fits for people that are listening to the official EFL podcast, what's your kind of rescue remedy to get you back on track if maybe you've had a few months that haven't quite gone according to plan?
So, I mean, there was times, obviously, at West Brom when things weren't going my way. I was being left out the squad. I was training on my own. And for me, sometimes a little break away from football, like being with my family, my daughter, my wife, just like being with them. And then ultimately, I get a lot of satisfaction around with chucking heavy things around the gym. So I react in a way where, well, as I said, I like proving people wrong. So people kind of expect you in them situations to just chuck your toys out the pram and not do what's told. But I think when it's asked of me in that way, I think I go to a different level. I work harder. I do extras. I'm in the gym every day. As I said, going around with heavy weights. I think some of the best times I trained at West Brom was when they were sometimes making me train on my own and then get me back in for like a few sessions. So like they were the best times I trained because I knew what I was doing. I felt comfortable in what was going on, and I wasn't reacting the way they probably thought I was going to react. And then got my head down, worked even harder, got in the gym, and I come away from it thinking, well, I've done my extras, I've trained well, I've done everything that I can control, I've done. And it's a thing that I've worked my psychologist well with, saying it's just control the controllables. You can only control what you can control.
Keep you one step ahead of the nose biters as well, won't it? Great to talk to you. Thanks for joining us the official EFL podcast. Thanks, Jordan.
Cheers, mate. Nice one.
And the message from that interview is don't mess with Jordan Hugill. No fixtures, of course, then in the Sky Bet Championship this coming weekend. Let's just remind ourselves where we are in the table, though. Fulham, the leaders, played 77 points. Bournemouth played 36-69. And then in third, played 38-63 points. Luton Town, 8 games to go. Nathan Jones has described their situation as utopia and that his team have nothing to fear. Next up in fourth are Huddersfield, played 39-63 points, lost their last two after going unbeaten in their preceding 17. Just below them, Sheffield United played 38-61, Blackburn played 39-61, and then just outside the playoff places, Middlesbrough played 37-59, QPR played 38-59, Forest played 36-58, Borough and Forest, the last two EFL clubs in the FA Cup, exiting last weekend. Then come Millwall in 10th, played 38-57. Coventry played 38-55. And West Brom are in 12th, played 38-54. And I'll just tell you as well where we are at the bottom end of the table. Derby now bottom, played 39-25 points. Peterborough United, good win for them at QPR at the weekend, played 38-26. Barnsley played 38-28, and Reading, after their massive win at the weekend over Blackburn, played 38-33.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Into Skybet League One, where MK Dons are currently enjoying a run of 9 wins in unbeaten last 12 games to keep the pressure on for an automatic promotion place. Quite a first season in league management then for head coach Liam Manning, who has already packed, working as academy coach at Ipswich Town, head of the 23s at West Ham United, then director of coaching for New York City and head coach of Lommel in Belgium, into his 36 years. And I saw you about a week after you'd taken over. So obviously Russell Martin left 6 days before the start of the season. You arrived 6 days after it got underway. I mean, talk about thrown in at the deep end. Would that be a fair description, Liam?
Us meeting feels about 4 seasons ago, I think.
Yeah, well, I'm just analysing your face now and things just to look for the wrinkles, grey hairs, little bits of baldy and stuff like that. Does it? It feels like you've been in situ for absolutely yonkers, does it?
No, it does. It's been, you know, really enjoyable when you reflect and look back on it. Been intense, been full on, but again, lots of learning, lots of enjoyable experiences where, again, I feel I've really developed and got a lot this year from, you know, working in such an intense, exciting league.
Yeah, I mean, I have to pay the compliment that whatever was going on inside at that time, you were remarkably calm and took things in your stride. Was that what was happening internally, or were there moments of acting as if for those first few weeks?
No, I think, and you'd have to ask the players and the staff around. I think, to be honest, I think that's probably one of our biggest sort of strengths as a group of staff, is that we are, you know, I preach a lot around not getting too high, not getting too low, and staying calm. I think that if you're clear in what's important and what helps you, you know, perform and get results, I think, you know, why get super emotional about things? So it's tough when you're in an industry where you care so much and you want to do so well and you want to, you know, show passion, which we obviously all are. I think at times our players need that element of reassurance and calmness in order to, you know, stay on track and, you know, understand that it's not around a week to week. It's also on the longer term progression.
Yeah. When you end up in league management, or when you end up in sort of with your name on the door, how much more consuming an experience is it compared to, say, those embryonic years when you were learning your trade in the academies?
Yes, it's completely different. And we've had numerous chats about it this year, in that I'm not even sure how you get prepared for it. I think there's a real, you know, you can do the courses, you can work in academies, you know, like me, you can go and work abroad. But until you're actually in it and living it, I'm not sure you can be prepared for it. I think you can have certain tools in place. But, you know, the one that just hit me was just the volume of games, the Saturday, Tuesday, that we're about a month in. And I was kind of thinking, we've only had like two training sessions. You don't get much time on the grass, which, again, then I think what you have to do is adapt and work in different ways. And that's where, again, I think the group we've got, we're very fortunate and also calculated with, in terms of we've got a young group that are really receptive to video, a good learning from sort of animations, and the use of modern technology really suits the group we've got. So it allows us to coach them in other ways, definitely.
Oh, that's interesting. You mean not just basic messaging, like having a WhatsApp group of what time the coach is leaving, but perhaps, I don't know, a shared video highlights where people can dip in and you can do it online, etc. Is that the sort of level of technical penetration now within football off the field?
Yeah, we spend a huge amount of time, and we're quite conscious. A lot of people talk around physical overload. We're also conscious of psychological overload. You know, I think we do all, obviously, opposition meetings, set piece meetings, post match meetings, individual meetings, unit meetings. So we spend a huge amount of time, you know, analysing pretty much everything. I think what we've really worked hard at this year is trying to find the sweet spot of how much information we give them through video, through sitting down in conversations, through, you know, tactical chats on a tactics board, you know, walking through things on the pitch. We tried to really look at how much information is enough for them. And we don't always get it right, as I'm sure, you know, most coaches would say. But I think it's one that we're really conscious of, a huge amount of data, and you can track and measure physical overload quite easily. But like I said, feeling is a big part of you know, seeing where the group is at, and then giving them the amount of information that we feel, you know, right at that given time.
That's really interesting, Liam. And it's a passion subject of mine, communication. Do you, a lot of times with some of my slurs, you might not believe that. What's your number one technique for knowing that a player has got it and received the information? Because obviously there are two contexts to communication: the context in which the person transmitting sends the signal, but obviously we're looking for the receiving party to receive it in the same context, if that is making sense to you.
Yeah, observation for me. I think, you know, using your eyes to observe is massive. I think, you know, and that's quite difficult, I think. But what all of our players will have their own individual plan. So that they've all got certain key objectives they're working on at a given time, which, you know, is for me, you'll have the post-game stuff that you need to address there and then. But you'll also have a current thread running through consistently of what that individual needs. So we try to make sure that, you know, because we have, you know, in order for the team to get better, if we can improve individuals, the ceiling will be much higher. So we'll give each player their objectives. We'll then weekly look at it and reflect if they do it well or if they don't. And then we'll sit and we'll work at it with them. And then for me, it's over a period of time to track that progress. So we use data, we use obviously video, we use GPS we use numerous, obviously data collection and our eyes, you know, ultimately, which is hugely important, and we'll track it that way. So I think the biggest thing is probably observation and time. I think, you know, for someone to learn something, it doesn't happen straight away.
Was this the sort of role that you always aspired to and were working towards?
I've been asked that a few times. I have to say, when I first started coaching, and it was the old school FA, and I remember being really nervous about doing my UEFA B license. And this was all pre-Treble P, so it wasn't actually many coaching jobs. I remember doing my B license, and it was the biggest sense of relief, like doing your driving test, where I thought, that's me finished, I'm done. I've got my B license, I'm happy. That's that. I'll have to. And then, to be fair, it was never a... because it wasn't many jobs when I first came into coaching. It wasn't like, right, I want to go and be a... I think it's a lot different now. I've not actively... I have my own plan, which I work on certain things that I know I need to get better at or things I'm good at. So I have my own plan with my own targets and objectives, but it was never a, this is it. It was only about 4 years ago at West Ham where I went, actually, I'd like to work in the senior game. But it happened a lot quicker than I planned.
Yeah, well, I'll take you back to being thrown in at the deep end. I guess the other part of your story is seeing working overseas as an opportunity rather than there wasn't an opportunity in your homeland.
Yeah, no, definitely. I was in a really, you know, good position at West Ham, you know, a prestigious academy, working with the 23s. Obviously had some really talented lads that had come through. And it was one of those where I'd done it for 4 years and was kind of like, I could probably stay, but how can I really challenge myself? How can I develop myself? And I think person and professional go hand in hand. I think if I, you know, can open my mind and, you know, educate myself to different cultures, different experiences, can I integrate myself into another culture, you know, adapt to moving abroad, the challenges that brings itself, then, you know, a lot of that will then transfer into, you know, the coaching world and the professional world for me. So that was ultimately the driving factor. Having a great life experience, I felt would, you know, hopefully develop me as a person. But then, you know, where you know, the MLS was at, where the academy in New York was at, the infancy of it, the, you know, the opportunity to have an impact and make change was a no-brainer in that it was, you know, going to be a terrific experience that would, you know, I felt would only make me better.
Are we a little bit hamstrung by tradition, do you think? Obviously, we do have the oldest cup competition in the world, 1872 FA Cup. We do have the oldest professional league in the world, the Football League, now EFL, 1888. Do we need to open our eyes to how other countries markets developing the game in different ways that we could actually learn from despite our traditions?
I definitely say we're learning now, and I'd say we have for a period of time. I think if you look at, you know, little things, I look at, you know, the structure now that we have with a sporting director and a head coach, that was obviously very you know, a European model, that one that obviously I worked in Belgium, which is why it kind of fitted for me coming back here. You know, other clubs like Norwich obviously have run it successfully for periods of time, so I'd actually say that here we're very, I'd say we're very forward thinking, and we've evolved well. I think the biggest thing for me is probably just opening your eyes in terms of, you know, you talk around communication. I think going abroad, you're stretched and you're challenged to communicate in different ways. You know, you have to adapt to the culture you're within, rather than obviously if you stay here, you potentially don't get that experience. That was also one big factor for me going out to New York, you know, where there's 42 nationalities within the academy. Whereas at West Ham, it was, you know, the staff were predominantly English. You know, we had some foreign players, but again, I think it, you know, communicating to adults is obviously completely different to communicating to you know, young players, young men. So I think there's certain experiences like that can definitely help when you come back in. And I think just opening your eyes, I think you know, having a conversation with a friend at the weekend, if you stay at one club, and, you know, loyalty is a massive thing. But I also think, you know, in terms of, there's so much, you know, research now and development that actually going into a, you know, a new environment, a new setting can open your eyes. And I did it going from Ipswich to West Ham. It definitely opened my eyes, that move. But then I also think going abroad, you know, gave me a completely different perspective from a coaching angle as well. So I'd definitely recommend it. That's for sure.
I suppose the other thing about where you are now is MK is obviously a relatively new club in the grand scale of things. So there's perhaps not the entrenched tradition or the need to follow what has been done in the past. There's an aspect of a blank sheet of paper to work on, which maybe suits your values, your philosophy, Liam.
Yeah, and even in the short time, you know, the club's been here, I think, you know, there's still a certain, you know, expectation, I think, and, you know, playing style. You know, the managers previously to me have, you know, have all played a certain style, which, you know, even in such a short period of time, you know, there's a part of that where I still feel that I still am aware of it. You know, and you look at some of the managers that have come through here, you know, have, you know, hugely successful, and, you know, and have done great jobs. So, you know, the chairman's been terrific in terms of providing real clarity around, you know, what the club is and how it works. So I think that, you know, like if you look at us this year, for example, we're nowhere near the top end of the league budget wise. But what I think we have got is clarity around our structure, clarity on how we've recruited, clarity on our playing style, which, again, I think, you know, it's a really powerful thing when you see that, definitely.
Have you surprised yourselves this season with where you are, with still being in contention for those automatic promotion places?
Surprised. I think, to be totally honest, when you come into the league, I think, you know, you obviously having been out of the country for 2.5 years and the staff that came in when we weren't experienced in League One, we obviously are all, we're obsessed by the game, you watch it. You know the leagues, but when you're actually in it, it's a completely different thing. I think when we joined, we set ourselves some targets, and the first target was to basically beat last season, because that's then a sign of progress. So that was kind of our bottom end goal that we'd set as a staff and as a group of players that we were working towards. But you know, you look at the league when you see the size of the clubs, the size of the fan bases, the stadiums, the history, the budgets that go with it. But like I said, for me, it was a game by game, head down, create a really strong culture, which I feel we've done at the club. You know, we've got a terrific group of players that I can't speak highly enough of that come in and are honest and hardworking. And I think when you get that, it's then a case of how much can you improve people.
Okay, so here's the question, and I promise you, your chairman Pete Winkelmann has not been in my ear with this one. I mean, his obviously overriding aim is to get to at least the Championship and sustain the club there. It's actually one season in 18 at that level. What needs to happen for a club like MK Dons to become a sustainable Championship club?
You get promoted first.
Well, is that, yeah, okay. I'll take that as read, mate, yeah.
I think where we're at with it, I think if you look at it, and I think that's where, again, you have to put a huge amount of credit onto, you know, the chairman in terms of the direction that he's taken the club in, but then also Liam Sweet and the sporting director of, you know, what we're recruiting now is, you know, I think we're second youngest in League One, which, again, if you look at January, for example, a lot of people have kind of forgotten. We sold Andrew Fisher to Swansea, we sold Matt O'Reilly to Celtic, and we had three young lads that were on loan go back. So I think we're quite clear now in terms of the makeup of the squad, the age of the squad, so that actually we're recruiting players now that, you know, have potential to get better and improve. They're nowhere near their peak. So for me, when you look at it, we're recruiting talented young players that are inexperienced, that are hungry and fit, but their ceiling, you know, is potentially a lot higher. The challenge then is for us is, let's use the group we've got now to try and get us there. And if we don't, similar to a Brentford model, then, you know, if certain players' journeys accelerate quicker than what, you know, the club and the team are able to provide, then obviously, you know, the inevitable, like a Matt O'Reilly, that moves on. But what then happened is we're working extremely hard to, like we've done in January, get, you know, the next young group in that will hopefully, you know, take the team where we want to get to. So hopefully then when and if, hopefully in the future we do get to the Championship, then obviously we've got a young, talented squad that hopefully are able to step up.
Final question. How has the gaffer changed in the 6-7 months since I saw him 1 week into the job?
A lot more bags under my eyes, I can assure you that.
Yeah, I can see that for certain, yeah. I can recommend a good moisturiser. I mean, seriously, what have you added to your mix, or how has your thinking changed since you've been in situ?
I think my core values, I think, in terms of how I treat players and how I am as a person, haven't changed. I think what I've learned to do is definitely become more adaptable, and I think really focus on observing the group and what they need. I think, you know, with the intensity of the program and the time of it, like I said, the Saturday, Tuesday, you don't always have time to think and reflect. And I think sometimes being able to take out maybe one or two key things rather than five or six is, you know, really important. It's also then how much do you give the players? I think, you know, when you're Saturday to Saturday, you can actually give them, you know, a decent amount of information spread over a period of time. If you're going Saturday, Tuesday, sometimes you go, right, bang, forget it, let's move on. Keep it in the back pocket for when I need it another day. So I think it's all driven by the players. all driven by the culture, and it's, you know, then observing that and ultimately, you know, recognizing what's needed and when.
Great to talk to you. Congratulations so far, and enjoy your weekend off with the international break, because you're going to need all that energy for the big push, aren't you?
We certainly are, yeah, definitely. Good to talk to you.
Elsewhere in Sky Bet League One, Shrewsbury Town delivered one of the performances of the season to win 3-0 at Rotherham United last weekend. I'm sure Liam Manning is extremely pleased about that. It's just one league win in the last five for the leaders. Wigan Athletic made up ground, whacking four past Morecambe, and Plymouth, who are currently fourth, did the same past Accrington Stanley. It's a curtailed fixture list in Sky Bet League One this coming weekend. Notably, Wimbledon, winless in the league in 18, are at home to Cambridge. Ipswich against Plymouth is 9th v 4th, and Sheffield Wednesday, just 1 point off the playoffs, entertain Cheltenham Town.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Into Sky Bet League Two, where it's time to find out what's in the water at Bristol Rovers. Three straight losses from the start of the season equaled an unwanted club record of 8 consecutive defeats. Contrast that with their form since the middle of February, when they have won 8 of their last 10, including their last 4, and they are currently one of 9 teams from 2nd to 10th, separated by 8 points. We can talk to leading scorer Aaron Collins. And at this moment, I say, what's this all down to? And you're going to tell me, Aaron, aren't you? Oh, yeah. Do you know what? I don't know. It's just happened.
No. There's a lot going on. There's a lot been going on behind the scenes. Obviously, at the start of the season, we had a brand new squad. I think there was between 20 to 25 signings. A lot left the club from last year. Obviously, we had the Joey come in, and Dewey signed other players. The start was not what we wanted, and it's let us down to where we could be now. But like I said, we hit December, the team they did, the players, everyone was there fit, and it's shown since December how well we've worked together.
I mean, listen, it's funny enough, earlier in the podcast, we've been talking to Jordan Hugel, that's had a lot of moves, and you obviously have, just reminding myself of your career. How long do you think it takes to get to know teammates, what their strengths and weaknesses are, how much pace you need to put on a ball, or how much pace you need on a ball to receive it? Are we talking a month, 3 months, 6 months, a year? How long does it take?
It's tough, like, because you really never know exactly like how it's gonna, like, everyone wants it to be perfect. Everyone, fans, players, coaching staff, they think, oh, start the season, new team, look at all these players, and we're gonna be the best, you know? But it don't always work like that. And like I said, we all come together first time in June, July, you'd say, at the ready for pre-season. And then it comes down to December. So over that period of time, what for us, it took us, say, three, four months to knit and become a proper team. And like the stats have shown since December, I think we've lost, I think it's 2 in 18, which thus is proved somewhere, and somewhere along the line the team has knitted and we started performing on the pitch.
Yeah. I mean, knowledge of statistics, a lot of players are very vague about that stuff, but you had it right to hand. Does that mean those stats I gave at the start about that cluster of teams? And let's be honest, you can literally go from outside, almost outside the playoffs, into an automatic promotion place at varying points over the last couple of weeks. Are you forensically analysing that, looking at who's there, looking at who you've still got to play, looking at who they've got to play?
Yeah, I just think ever since we've started in good form, you're always looking at the table. Like, I think it was when we played Newport 2 to 3 weeks ago, we knew if we beat them, we were going a point behind them, when they've been up in the playoffs in the top three the whole season, and we've been down in 16th in the bottom half of the table. And it is, we're looking at each game as a come, and Saturday was a prime example where we knew going into the game Saturday, if we went and won that game, we were going joint with them, or if we beat them by two or more goals, we were going ahead of them. And yeah, it's. I think the way we are looking at it is completely different to a lot of other teams who are up there, because they've been up there all season. For us, the only way is up for them, it's obviously I was in the situation for Forest Green last year. We were in the top three and we didn't leave that until the last six, eight games. And the mentality is completely different. It's just because when you're at the top, you're always looking down and worrying about what could be. But when you're down the bottom and you're looking up, you're always thinking about what it could be. And it's only positives to take from that situation.
Do you know what? This is one of the fundamentals for me of football. There's a big difference, is there not, between staying somewhere and getting somewhere. They are very different pressures to have, Aaron.
I totally agree on that, yeah.
Yeah, and as you say, you've obviously been through it there. You did mention Newport County there. Do you know anybody that plays for Newport County, mate?
Yeah, my brother plays for them, yes.
Because, of course, that's the other dynamic here. Does a little part of you want to get... Well, you want to get an automatic place anyway, but it would be really nice not to meet him in the playoffs again this year, would it not?
A couple of people are already talking about it back home. Couple of mates of mine and family, and the last thing we want again is for a Collins playoff semi-final, because last year it was tough to go through for me personally, as well as obviously everyone involved with family and friends, but then the positive was as well, my brother went to Wembley and played at Wembley, so it's always tough, and I'm praying for not the same situation again this year.
Yeah, did you go to Wembley to watch him, or was it just too much for you?
I went to Wembley to watch him, which was tough, but I will always be there supporting my brother, obviously.
Yeah. How big a decision was it for you? You were out of contract at Forest Green, weren't you? How big a decision was it to run your contract down and to move on?
I didn't get offered a contract until quite late at Forest Green, but it was... Oh, it was a tough decision because how well we had done that season, as well as how much I bonded with the team. And we created a team that season, which I knew this season would go far and do close to what we'd done last year. And as it's proved now, they're top of the league and they're looking to go get the promotion. But for me, it was just, I don't know if I had that taste of promotion and coming to Bristol Rovers, I think, knowing I was coming to a bigger club, give me that more energy and positivity. Right, I'm at a bigger club now. I've had that taste of it and I'm going to do it now with a bigger club. Obviously, like I said, nothing's happened yet. We are joint third, but there's still 8 games to go. And like I said, if we don't get promoted, I've had a good season and I've enjoyed myself. But if we go and get promoted, I can look back and Like I said, I'll be in League One as well with a bigger club next season, I think.
Again, at the risk of repeating a question I asked Jordan Hugill a little bit earlier on, I mean, your career has had highs, lows, the move to Wolves didn't quite work out, et cetera, et cetera. How have you built your own personal resilience levels up to be able to deal with those contrasting highs and lows?
Yeah, well, it's football. Like, no, not many people realise on the outside with the highs and the lows. Everyone just thinks you're in a job that you love and it's all happy and it's far from it. And like, it obviously proved that last season individually with me, where I didn't get that promotion and I had to go and watch my brother at Wembley. Like, as well as this season, I got the highs so far where, like, I'm top goal scorer. I'm performing in front of 8,000 to 10,000 each week, and it's building my confidence massively. We've got a great team here. We're looking to go and get that promotion, and if we do, we know we're gonna make a massive change to this club.
Is this absolutely true that in your early days, to pay for your travel costs to go training, that would have been at Newport back in the day, wasn't it? You actually had to work in McDonald's to sort of generate the cash to be able to get in and out of training.
Yeah, I was never a professional footballer until I was turning 17. I was working at McDonald's. I didn't get a scholarship at anywhere. And I was just it was called a college program where you were at Newport County, but you were never being paid. So I was going to school there. I was doing my BTEC sport as well as training with my group of college players. And yes, I had a moped, so I had to pay petrol somehow, and I had to go and get a job to bring income in and live my life. And yeah, and I worked in McDonald's for, I think it was about 4 to 5 months. And then eventually I was Justin Edinburgh and Michael Flynn helped me out, got me onto the first team, and Justin Edinburgh gave me a first team contract and I was able to quit my job.
Do you ever, as you're on the way to the brilliant Memorial Ground, I love it as a match day, do you ever pass a McDonald's and just get that 10-second glimmer of your previous life and how far your journey has taken you?
Yeah, definitely. Like, obviously, you see McDonald's is everywhere these days, and I'm driving in every day. I go past one, and yeah, it is. You do look back, and you are grateful for what I've done with my career, as well as how far I've pushed myself. As well as you said, people look at it, and some people will be like, "Oh, I'd never work at McDonald's," and everyone's got to start somewhere, haven't they?
Do you know, you do realise, don't you, that this run you've been on has clearly caught hold of you, because you've had a big smile on your face throughout this entire interview.
Yeah, no, I'll always, that's me as a person. Like I said, I'm not one to let the downs or be negative about anything. I'm a very positive person, and I think that's shown that since an early age. And that's, I'd like to think that's where I am now, and hopefully I can go much further.
I was going to say, and I guess the message to your teammates then, if you were doing the team talk rather than Joey Barton, would be no limits on what can't be achieved over this last 8 games of the season.
No, exactly. We've got 8 games to go, and it's all there for us to go and get and go and reach out and perform for.
You've lifted me, I feel, invigorated, positive, energetic as a result of talking to you. Enjoy the rest of the season, wherever it takes you.
Thank you very much.
Elsewhere in Sky Bet League 2, leaders Forest Green Rovers win at Colchester United, ended their 7-match winless run. Carlisle United's victory in the Cumbrian Derby, their 5th win in 6 since Paul Simpson's return, ended Mark Cooper's time in charge of Barrow. They've appointed sometimes EFL podcast pundit Phil Brown until the end of the season. He inherits a team in 21st place and 6 points above the relegation zone. And no wins in his last 9 games ended Paul Tisdale's short time as manager of Stevenage. They've replaced him with long-term target Steve Evans, whose first scheduled match at Mansfield Town last weekend couldn't be fulfilled, with his new club stating they didn't have enough players to fulfil the fixture. Stevenage, fingers crossed, head to second place Exeter this coming weekend. These are all 3 o'clock kickoffs on Saturday. Newport, currently 6th, are at Bradford. Aaron Collins, Bristol Rovers, head to Carlisle. Tranmere in 5th are heading to Colchester. And 3rd place Northampton Town are at home to Hartlepool United. That's it for this episode. A big thank you to Aaron Collins, to Liam Manning and to Jordan Hugel. If you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.